You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The latest numbers say the economy is doing pretty well when it comes to big picture numbers like employment, the stock market, and wages. Even inflation has slowed down. But many Americans continue to express concern and dissatisfaction with their own financial situation. You may have seen headlines like one from The Economist, "Why are Americans so gloomy about their great economy?" Our next guest found that a lot of people have some pretty good reasons to be uncertain about the economy and how it affects them. She's been talking to people all over the country about their economic concerns. Earlier this week, she co-wrote a piece in the New York Times about why, as the headline says, many Americans believe the economy is rigged. She joins us now to share what she found. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When you see news about the economy, do you feel like it reflects your own experience? What are your concerns when it comes to how the economy affects you? Do you feel precarious? Maybe things are okay right now, but you're not far from a big problem, potentially. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Kathy Kramer is professor of political science at UW-Madison, co-chair of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences Commission on Reimagining Our Economy. Kathy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much, Rob. It's great to be here.
Well, sometimes when I look at coverage of this issue, the economy looks good, big picture, people express discontent, there's almost a hint that, well, what's wrong with people? Why aren't they understanding the economy is good? You found, as you talk to people, a lot of good reasons for that.
Yeah, and one big one is that when we ask how is the economy doing, we often use these big indicators like levels of unemployment or inflation that are pretty far removed from people's lives. And what people see is the prices they're paying, right, or the level of credit card debt they have. And so we just went around the country and convened these small groups of people and listened to them and asked them, what are your challenges and what are you experiencing?
I want to talk a little more about the project that you did here. You were literally going around the country. Set this scene for us. How are you getting people together? How did these conversations shake out?
Well, the whole commission was organized around the idea that we needed to think about how well the American people are doing, aside from how well the economy is doing, to try to recommend things that would help create an economy where more people, a wide range of people can thrive. And we decided that one great way to figure out what to do was to listen to people. So people on the commission, some staff from the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, some great undergraduate students right here from UW-Madison helped us out in facilitating these conversations where we asked questions that were based on this platform that I've helped develop with this nonprofit called Cortico. The platform was called Fora, and the idea is you just ask people big questions like, what are your concerns? What do you hope for? What do you wish would be different about your life 5 years from now? And what do you want people in power to hear about the challenges that you're facing? So there was a wide range of people in many corners of the country.
Now, you shared actual audio of some of the responses you got. I want to listen to one of these now. We've got a teacher you talked to in rural Tennessee. Here it is.
I just said I was at my fullest potential. Probably, 5 minutes ago, and I'm still like, one doctor's visit away from not being there. And pretty much most people I know are.
So one doctor's visit away from not being in good shape economically. This is something I've heard over the years, the idea that people feel precarious. It may not even matter where they are on the income scale. One big change could put somebody into potentially poverty.
Yeah, and that the idea of like when you wonder, when are people going to feel like the economy is good and when they're doing well in the economy? Basically, people just are looking for some level of stability, right? Some ability to plan, to save. And for lots of folks, that's just not possible. They're on a weekly, monthly basis struggling to make ends meet, and they just don't have the bandwidth to really save or plan, much less, make ends meet sometimes. So, her statement in the end, she's saying like, I'm one doctor's visit away from disaster. And most people I know are. It's common, right? She's at the same time talking about, I just a moment ago said I'm at kind of at my the peak of my economic well-being. And yet I feel like I'm on the edge of disaster.
And beyond the obvious, like, economic impact, if you have that doctor's visit that wipes out all your economic gains, I want to quote from your piece here. An absence of economic resilience prevents people from spending time with family, from getting involved in their community, and from finding ways to build a safety net. So it's not just the obvious problem of you run out of money, but this follow-on effect that hurts us as a society.
Yeah. And so we ask people, you know, what would a good economy look like? And people just want, like you said, time with their family. They want a little bit of time to do something other than work. They want time to just be well in whatever way they define that. And our economy currently, that's not what it's built for. It's not built for the average American's well-being.
Kathy Kramer is with us from UW-Madison, political scientist there. She's been involved in a research project talking to actual people about how they experience the economy. You can join in with your response to some of the things you're hearing now at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Daryl is with us in Menominee Falls. Daryl, hi.
Hi. I wanted to say that I believe that the politicians in Madison and Washington are so far removed from reality. They seem to be passing all kinds of legislation that's in favor of large corporations, huge tax breaks, and the working class people are still struggling to make ends meet. And it doesn't seem like there's any connection with the politicians about what people are going through every day just to earn a living.
Damn.
And I don't think the politicians could live on $15 an hour themselves. I'd like to see them do that.
Daryl, thank you so much for the call. This echoes, I think, a lot of what you've heard, Kathy.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Daryl. That was a pretty widespread sentiment. And it might interest you to know that one of our recommendations was actually to foster training for working class folks so they can run for office and have their views in the mix and have their experiences part of the policymaking, because there are very few people of working class background serving in any level of government in the United States right now.
Thanks a lot for that call, Daryl. Flipping things around, are you hoping that politicians and other decision makers take something away from the conversations you've had with people around the country?
Definitely. And I'm happy to say that when you having an op-ed in the New York Times helps get a little bit of notice. And so it is sparking some conversations with policymakers. And we're not in the business of lobbying with this report, and that's not what the American Academy of Arts and Sciences does. But we hope that what we heard can be informative to people in policy making power, right? So that they can learn from what we heard.
Thanks again for that call, Daryl. And here's another clip from one of the people you talked to. This is somebody in Kentucky, I think with some of the same themes as Daryl. Here's a listen.
I just feel like the underdog can't get ahead, and it's all about greed and profit.
And in your New York Times piece, it seems like that greed theme came through loud and clear for you.
It really did, because one of the questions we asked people was, what values do you think drive the economy? And almost always people said, I'm sorry to laugh, but people said without skipping a beat, well, greed, you know, the profit motive. And the values driving our economy are not, you know, what can we do to make sure all people thrive in this country? Instead, people talked a lot about greed.
Now, I almost pulled a clip from the movie Wall Street, the famous Michael Douglas's Gordon Gekko, his greed is good speech. I mean, there's a political and economic argument that says greed is good. It drives innovation. It's something that a rising tide lifts all boats eventually. I mean, did people confront that kind of thinking that, hey, freeing up rich people to get richer may have a benefit for everybody?
There definitely were conversations about growth. Like, isn't growth a good thing, and doesn't that help everybody out in the end? And sometimes people connected that to greed, but I'd say more often the question of does growth have to be about greed? Mm-hmm. You know, can't we find a way to create jobs that actually help communities thrive in terms of enabling people to do work that's meaningful to them, that allows them to live their values as opposed to crushing their soul.
And then on the opposite end, I think, of the political spectrum, the argument is, hey, if everybody feels precarious economically, we need a stronger social safety net. Is that, did people talk in those terms at all when you talked to them?
Not so much, to be honest. I mean, at times, but it was more a kind of bewilderment with the system as a whole. It was sort of disgruntlement with employers, with mm-hmm. the banking system, not just with government and what the government is or is not providing. Mm-hmm. So when people told us that they thought the system was rigged, they're not just talking about politicians. They're talking about the private sector and many different sectors of the country.
Kathy Kramer is with us, professor of political science at UW-Madison, co-chair of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences Commission on Reimagining Our Economy. She's with us for a look at how Americans are feeling about the economy. She's just written up a long-term project talking to people around the country about how the economy impacts them, why they may feel a mismatch between the good numbers you see in the headlines and their realities. Join in at 800-642-1234 to share your perspective on this. When you see positive reports about the economy, low unemployment numbers, Wall Street looking pretty good, a stock market going up, inflation finally tapering off, do you feel that? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with UW-Madison political scientist Kathy Kramer about why Americans feel like the economy is not great for them. They feel precarious despite sunny reports and many economic indicators. She's been talking to people all around the country about their personal, their family economies. Join in at 800-642-1234 with your report on how you feel about the economy. If you feel like things are stable or things are precarious for your economic future, join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on another caller now. Bethany is with us in Durand. Bethany, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Bethany?
So I think one of the things being middle class that I've noticed with the economy is that the things that we're often doing for pleasure, especially with our family, going out to eat, buying, you know, chips or some snack foods, going out to a concert, those things are now becoming out of reach for middle class. You go to McDonald's, and for a family of four, it's over $30. And meanwhile, these companies are making record profits. And it's really just really discouraging.
Bethany, thanks a lot for the call. Kathy, again, This is the kind of thing you're hearing.
Yeah, I mean, I know you can't see me, Bethany, but I'm nodding my head as you're talking. And we heard that a lot, and that perception of you know, how can it be tough for me to buy a bag of chips for my family when clearly there's lots of wealth in this country, right? It's difficult for people to square. And so that's just another reason why it's not a mystery that people don't think the economy is doing great, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it may be doing great in the abstract, but in our own personal lives, not so much.
Thanks for that call. I want to listen to another person you talked to. This one's an HR employee in Indiana talking about, you know, and this is something I think you heard from a lot of people. You don't need to be rich, but what does financial well-being sound like? Here's a listen.
Financial well-being is, for me, is basically being able to take care of my everyday expenses and also having like emergency savings, because the way the economy is going right now, you don't know where it's going to be, you know, tomorrow, next week. So yeah, it's basically about being financially stable. It's not about being rich, but it's about being able to take care of your everyday needs without, you know, stressing.
Okay, a lot in there, Kathy.
Yeah, I mean, that level of uncertainty, right? Like in any aspect of our lives, when we experience uncertainty, I mean, it can turn to anxiety, right? And it's this undertone of worry that makes life a little bit more tough, a little less enjoyable. And that lack of a cushion is just very common for lots of folks.
Thanks again for that call. Mike joins us now in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The Wisconsin state unemployment system, the amount that it pays people who get laid off or let go from work is historically at a very low level. It doesn't keep up with the rent payments or the payments for gas and cell phone bills. I don't think they've changed the amounts in 20 or 30 years. And if you take a look at the surrounding states, Wisconsin's maximum unemployment compensation is roughly half of what it is for Minnesota. And it just creates a spiraling effect where people can't pay their bills, they've been let go, and then they're counting on the safety net, and the safety net isn't there for them.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Kathy?
Yeah, we definitely heard a lot about that, and we heard a lot about how, two things about the safety nets that are in place. One, you know, people feeling like they're not set up to really get people back on their feet, much less help them thrive. And a lot of times there's what people call these cliff effects, where if you start to earn a little bit more and suddenly you're bumped off of unemployment benefits or bumped off of welfare or, housing support, it's a lot of the safety net programs are difficult to navigate and not what a lot of people feel like they would need to really have a stable footing and get back on their feet and get ahead, much less get ahead. Yeah.
Thanks for that call, Mike. On a related note, here's one of the participants you talked to in Chicago about where you were just talking about making too much money, maybe getting knocked off a program.
It's like you can get the benefits if you're living at or below the poverty line. Right. And we know that number is seriously low. But for the people such as myself who are the working class, it knocks me out of a lot of the opportunity to qualify for a lot of the programs that could assist in benefiting myself and my child in order for us to make ends meet. And that is, a huge barrier.
Is this part of a solution here, Kathy? I know some programs taper, like I think the Earned Income Tax Credit and some other things, health subsidies under the Affordable Care Act. I mean, is that part of a solution instead of yes or no, a gradation?
Yeah, just having these cutoffs where just earning one more dollar overnight bumps you off. It's not working for people.
Thanks a lot for the call. Back to our callers. Dave is with us in Toma. Dave, hi.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with greed. If it wasn't for greed, we wouldn't have the economy that we do today. And being a landlord, I see so many tenants that scam the system. They collect benefits and they work besides. And I've got other renters that they just do the very minimum they can do to get by, and then they complain that they're not getting enough. Everybody's different. If somebody wants to make it, I always had two jobs in my life. And I just don't have a lot of sympathy for people that aren't making ends meet.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Did you hear that that pushback from some of the people you talked to?
I suppose a bit. But as the caller was saying, everybody's different and is going to view these issues differently. But I wonder, people who maybe be worthwhile if more tenants and landlords had the opportunity to listen to one another. Mm-hmm. I bet it's pretty rare.
Thanks, Dave, for calling in. Victoria is with us in Marinette. Victoria, hi.
Hi. My comment was that I'm 69 years old, and my comment was that we got along just fine with a regular telephone. We paid our doctor bills. We didn't have insurance. And, we didn't have to go to football games that cost, $150 a ticket. We kind of brought this situation on ourselves.
Victoria, thanks for the call. Is this something about our changing expectations? But then again, doctor's visits cost a lot more than they used to, Kathy.
Yeah, well, it's a great question that we both just what we want to consume has changed over time for sure, as have housing prices and the cost of a lot of goods that we need. And that the sentiment of, you know, things used to be different is common. I mean, people definitely spoke a lot about how it used to be easier to get by.
Thanks a lot for that call. Kathy, in just our last a little less than a minute now, what's one takeaway, again, that you're hoping policymakers get out of your work here?
Honestly, to listen more. It's kind of expensive in a way because it takes time and you have to give people the opportunity to reflect. You have to give them your time. But it's remarkable what you learn when you just pause and invite people to share their concerns and their challenges and their hopes. I'm speaking to the choir here on WPR. Thank you very much. But I hope they listen.
Kathy, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's always an honor.
Kathy Kramer is a professor of political science at UW-Madison and co-chair of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences Commission on Reimagining Our Economy. Been talking about her research into our attitudes on the economy and why many Americans she interviewed feel like the economy is not in their favor in spite of the positive headlines you might see about the economy.